It's good to see each one of you out this morning. Appreciate your presence and hope the things we talk about this morning are going to be first and foremost pleasing to God. If you'd like to open your Bibles to the book of Proverbs, I want to read a few verses there in Proverbs, the 10th chapter. We'll read the first 10 verses from the New King James. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is the grief of his mother. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivers from death. The Lord will not allow the righteous soul to famish, but he casts away the desires of the wicked. He who has a slack hand becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a wise man. He who sleeps at harvest is a son who causes shame. Blessings are on the head of the righteous, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. The memory of the righteous is blessed, but the name of the wicked will rot. The wise in heart will receive commands, but a prating fool will fall. He who walks with integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will become known. He who winks with the eye causes trouble, but a prating fool will fall. This morning's lesson is specifically entitled, Teaching Our Children Values, and specifically today, the value of honesty. But I must tell you that the lesson is going to be applicable to each and every one of us. Even in our older age, we can find ourselves at times prone to or tempted to offer up a lie when in fact we need to be cautious and present the truth. And it's important that young parents recognize that their children need to begin to understand at a very young age the value, the importance of honesty no matter what the consequences might be. There was a man who died a few years ago by the name of Paul Harvey, who had a number of interesting radio programs and wrote some interesting books that always had a very pithy moral story behind it. And one day he told the story of four boys who were late for school because they knew there was a test that was due during that first period. And so they simply decided as they came to school in their car, they got out of the car already having missed the class, and they were going to get there just at the end, and they said, "We're going to tell the teacher we had a flat tire, and that's why we weren't able to make it for the test." They came in and they proclaimed their innocence and would have been prepared had it not been for their flat tire. The teacher was quite sympathetic. She told the children, the four boys, to each go to a corner of the room, and they were given a blank piece of paper and a pencil. And she said, "You can pass or fail the test based on this one question and this one question alone. Which tire?" It'll get to you eventually. The boys hadn't planned their lie out. They were just going in with the idea that they'd had a flat tire. She was going to find out whether or not they were telling the truth. It's important that we understand the necessity of truth within our lives. And it can come down to some of the smallest of details. A clerk might give you a $10 bill when in fact they were supposed to have given you a $1 bill. And you go out and you find that they'd made the mistake, but after all, it was their mistake. What do you do about it? Do you go back in and give them the $10 bill? Or do you simply go on your way saying, "Well, that was their mistake"? I'll tell you something that I'm not altogether comfortable with at times. When staff wants to give me a particular discount that they decide on their own without any true authority, is there a degree of dishonesty going on there? And I don't say that in a general sense because there are some wait staffs who are given a degree of latitude to make sure the customer remains happy. but simply for somebody without authority to take upon themselves the free gratis to you of something that they had no right to give, is it not in fact a dishonest act that they are involved in? I think it's important that we recognize the need for integrity within our lives, the need to be upright and honest, even in the smallest of details. And I will grant you that some of the things that I'll say over the next few minutes, and then into the lesson even, perhaps you might think, well, doesn't that get to be a little nitpicking? But I would suggest to you, young people, that it's important that you develop and decide the character you're going to have now with regard to the matter of honesty. You find yourself out playing tennis, or you find yourself out playing basketball, but tennis is going to make my best illustration here, and your opponent is beating you pretty good, and you seem to be at wit's end, and what you find yourself doing is, when the ball is just close to the line, and if you're not aware, in most games of friendly tennis, the one receiving the ball has the integrity to define whether or not the ball is out. And the guy on the other end accepts the integrity. Do you call a ball out that really was in? It's questionable, but because he's beating you so bad, you go ahead and you fudge it in your favor? You know, one of the most interesting games out there that mostly men play is the game of golf. And of course, there's nothing wrong with having a friendly game where you decide that we're going to move the ball off of any rough area and it's not going to cause you a penalty, though the rules of the PGA would say you can't do so. But there are other areas where it just really becomes a matter of your own integrity. The other guys aren't around you, and you kind of shank it off to the side, and it only goes 3 or 4 feet in the rough that you're already in. They aren't looking, and so you don't count it. I get the impression from a lot of golfers that I've played with over the years that, yeah, they did count it. Not that they're superior people, but they've simply taken on that idea that that's going to be a point of integrity. My score is truly going to reflect what my score is. And what I would hope this morning in the lesson is that our young people would recognize that it is important to begin to build integrity of honesty even at the age of 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 years of age. So that the lesson this evening, or this morning rather, is included in our young people that sometimes will allow their minds to wander off on things, when in fact, this time, Mr. Joe standing up here really is talking to you as first, second, and third graders, fourth, fifth, and sixth graders, junior high and high school, and yes, even those in college, and especially to we as parents, as we instill in our children the integrity necessary to do what is right in God's eyes, to make the right decision. To the young people not looking at the test of the girl beside you that always gets A's, and she's careless with her paper, and there the answers are, and you're not quite sure what to do. Honesty comes into play if it becomes the character of who you are. What God says about honesty is important for us to know and understand. We're going to read and consider a couple of passages here. The passages on the screen will be from the New King James, as the proverb writer says in Proverbs 6, verses 16 and 17. These six things the Lord hates, yes, seven are an abomination to Him. And then He'll go on to name them, but particularly a proud look, a lying tongue, is an abomination to the Lord. Hands that shed innocent blood. Now, as you go on to read the list, and as you look at the things here, you might say, oh, I understand the idea of shedding innocent blood, but He also says that a lying tongue is an abomination to the Lord. Now, in this morning's lesson, we're not going to get into mincing whether or not somebody understands what a truth was and what it wasn't. If they mistakenly told something they thought to be true, We're talking about the intent to deceive, the intent to lie, the intent to tell something that's not true. It's important for us to know and understand our responsibility. We need to have perfect and just weights and measures in our life. We want it in the things in commerce, but they're applicable in our lives as well. Are you a young man in high school or in college or in grade school? Are you a young lady who is known as one who has just weights and measures? I would hope that you would be such. The proverb writer tells us in Proverbs, the 28th chapter, verse 13, "He who covers his sins will not prosper, but whoever confesses and forsakes them will have mercy." It's important that we understand these things within our lives. Back in Deuteronomy, it is said there within the law of Moses in chapter 25, verses 13 through 15, "You shall not have in your bag different weights, a heavy and a light. You shall not have in your house differing measures, a large and a small. You shall have a perfect and just weight, a perfect and just measure, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Lord your God is giving you." In other words, if we're going to decide what, here's how much grain you're giving me, let me get a scale out, and now I'm going to bring out the weight that will profit me, and I've got two different sets of weights. They say the same thing on them, but one is lighter or heavier, and I'll use the one that is to my advantage. Apparently that was something that was common in Egypt and in other parts of the world, and God said it's not to be among His people. It's not to be among His people even today. Over in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul says there in Ephesians, the 4th chapter, verse 28, "Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give to him who has need." We don't maybe perhaps put it into this category, but the idea of stealing the truth through lying is the same as if we were stealing merchandise. In Romans, the 12th chapter, verse 17, "Repay no man evil for evil. Have regard for good in the sight of all men." It's not simply enough to say, "I'm justified in telling this lie because they've done me wrong." I'm never justified in telling a lie. No matter what catty thing she said about me to those others, I'm not justified in lying about her. No matter what dishonest thing he said about me that affected my reputation to this girl that's important to me, or to my fellow young men, I'm now going to say a lie about him. No, I'm never justified. I'm never justified. This idea of regarding things good in the sight of all men isn't just for the grown-ups. It's for each and every one of us. In 2 Corinthians, there in the 8th chapter, verse 21, Paul tells us, reminds us, his desire in this instance of taking the collection to the needy saints, providing honorable things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. That's what he was concerned about. And that's what we need to be concerned about. Everything I do, every action I take, whether it's monetary or in other areas of life, am I providing the opportunity for people to question my veracity, my honesty, my integrity? The story is told of a man who is distraught because of his son who is all caught up in drugs. And he had become a habitual liar and gotten into the drugs. And the father was explaining the lies in regard to the boy's drug abuse. And the phone rang and the mother answered the phone because the father was having a conversation. And she covered the phone to tell the husband that a particular man wanted to talk to him. And the father said, "Tell him I'm not here." I'd suggest to you that the young boy was a liar not because of the drugs, but because he'd seen an example of lying by his parents. You might think that's a harsh condemnation of the father, but I would suggest not. Our children are smart enough to know that when we tell them what truth is, and then they see us fudge on that truth, that's a kind way of really lying. They catch us lying to others. Then when we sit down to teach them the moral truths of integrity and honesty, what we don't know is that in all probability, the ears have been plugged by our examples. Over in Matthew, the 5th chapter, Jesus makes a simple statement when he says, "Let your yes be yes and your no, no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil one." You can create all kinds of dilemmas to ask the question whether or not you should tell the truth in every instance. Philosophy classes in college, perhaps even in high school now, love to create moral equivalency tests. Or they love to create tests that blur the lines of honesty. I'm not even going to give you some of the examples because some of the examples really do create for you a moral dilemma. What do you do about it? But I'll tell you this. Regardless of the moral dilemma they can come up with in a hypothetical discussion, it's absolutely essential that you maintain and determine that you're constantly going to tell the truth regardless of what's going on in your life and in the classroom and what anybody ever puts you into. You're going to tell the truth. The proverb writer says there in Proverbs 22:23, "Buy the truth, do not sell it. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding. Do not do anything to diminish the truth that is within you and is a part of who you are and who you want to be." The psalmist in Psalm 15, verses 2 and then down to 4. "He who walks upright and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart, in whose eyes a vile person is despised, but he honors those who fear the Lord. He who swears to his own hurt and does not change." We need to have honesty within our lives. That's what God says about it. God wants us to understand and know the value of honesty. The value of honesty can be seen as we look at various characters seek integrity and honesty and esteem within their lives. Job and all that had happened within him. As we come to the end of Job, as all that misery is coming to an end, in Job 31 verses 5 and 6 it says, "If I have walked with falsehood, or my foot has hastened to deceit, let me be weighed on honest scales that God may know my integrity." And then as that book concludes, of all the men in the discussions, four of them, and then Job, of course, in all of their discussions, in all of their agonizings and reasonings of what was going on in his life, Job had uttered these things at the end, and it was Job who was praised by God. It was Job who was honored by God as he sought to be honest and as he sought integrity within his life. It is honesty that is going to cement close relationships. There in Proverbs 31, as we talk about the virtuous woman, the heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. As we talk this morning, we're talking to our young people, but we're also reminding us as husbands and wives, we must always strive to have a relationship in which our husband or wife shall never have need to doubt the integrity of the marital relationship. I don't know of any case here, but it may have happened. But I can tell you this, rather than hear the things that I'm saying and be distraught, understand this, that if those kinds of bonds of trust have been broken, they can be restored. I've seen individuals who have not only broken those bonds of trust, but they have worked to strengthen them and make them stronger than they ever were before. So it doesn't have to be a gloomy picture, but it's a picture of hope in determining to understand that you want to have that integrity between you as a husband and wife. We need to learn to be true to ourselves. One of the greatest dangers comes if you deceive yourself. To the young people, I want you to understand, you can get away with deceiving mom and dad. You can get away with deceiving some of your friends some of the time. But when you're going to get in real trouble is when you are successfully able to deceive yourself. When you start to deceive yourself, you are headed down a road that may lead you so far away from God you'll never come back. James 1 says this in verses 13 through 18. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away of his own desires and enticed. Then when desire conceives, it brings forth birth to sin, and sin when it is full grown brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. Of His own will He brought us forth by the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of His creatures. We need to understand that God is not responsible for my sins. God is not responsible for my sins. We've just learned that from what we read there in James. I am right because I listen to God. May not always be true if I don't do what God says to do. I'm to be a doer of the word and not a hearer only. If I say that I've heard the word of God and then say I'm justified in doing what I want to do, even if it's a lie, because I heard the word of God, then James is pointing out that that's the wrong kind of standard. And it will not stand, it will not succeed. Controlling my speech is not really necessary. That's what's part of this that will continue to deceive us. James says in the 26th verse of chapter 1, if anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, he deceives his own heart. This one's religion is useless. I think I really am something to be considered, and therefore I deceive myself. If anyone thinks himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. And we have to remember the value of what Paul says. Do not be deceived. Evil companions or evil company corrupts good habits. That's not just something that's easy to read and memorize and say. If I get into the habit of lying, I usually will find myself being moved into the company of those who are liars. Because the people, the young people, the kids who know and practice truth, they know you're a liar and they don't want to put up with it anymore. And as you seek companionship, you find yourself an outcast from those who are telling the truth and have truth as a standard. And they'll have nothing to do with you any longer. Ultimately, we need to have the responsibility of handling the word in indeed truth. In 2 Corinthians 4, verse 2. But if we have denounced the hidden things of shame, not walking in craftiness, nor handling the word of God deceitfully, but by manifestation of the truth, commending ourselves to every man's conscience in the sight of God. That's the value of learning honesty. Over in Ephesians, the fourth chapter and sixth chapter in verse 4. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. It's my responsibility as a father. It's your responsibility as fathers. Teach your children the truth and demand it of them. And call them on it when it needs to be done. We need to be careful and never allow ourselves to be dishonest when dealing with others. We need to recognize, as Luke 16 and verse 10 says, he who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. That means this. There's never a time when it's okay to give a little lie. That time doesn't exist. We take these kind of passages and we look at them to the adults. And we look at them to what it means to be a Christian. And I agree with that. But this morning I want us all, and especially our kids, our young people here, to understand that it's true within your own life as well. We have the responsibility of learning honesty. And here are some of the dangers that we have to watch out for in this matter of learning honesty. There's a danger of exaggerating. When you find yourself taking an incident and exaggerating it in order, and we're going to kind of mix a few of these, in order to get people's attention, in order to elevate yourself to them, in order to make it look as if you are something, you are laying the groundwork to become an habitual liar. You're laying the groundwork to become an habitual liar. Strangely enough, understatements can do the very same thing. Telling the truth, but not the whole truth. Ananias and Sapphira did that. and accustom their lives. When you have the opportunity, when asked about an incident, and you choose to leave out the things that are detrimental to you, when you were being asked for the entirety, you're laying the groundwork to become an habitual liar within your life. When you always make sure that things make you look better. You take the circumstance that didn't work out well, but you tell it so that it elevates you in importance in the eyes of others, or at least that is what your intent is. You're lying. And again, compounded with the things that we've just talked about, you're building a character of a liar. When you maintain silence, when you're asked a question, but you do not reply, and your lack of reply, your silence, actually leaves the opposite impression of that which is true. You're building the foundations to become an habitual liar. When you find yourself lying to avoid trouble because you don't want the spanking, or you don't want the timeout, you don't want the loss of dating privileges, you don't want the loss of the car, you don't want the loss of computer time, internet time, TV time, you don't want the loss of time of sitting and doing your homework. That would never happen. Alright, that would never happen to me. It might happen to you good students. It would have never happened to me. But that's lying. And you're eating away at the character of who you are to be. You're eating away at the integrity of who you want others to think you are. I want to close by reading a story to you. A pizza, a party, and a moonlight ride. I'm considered a professional speaker. I mean, that's what preachers are considered. I may have trouble getting through this poem, but we're going to get through it together. A pizza, a party, and a moonlight ride. Jenny was so happy about the house they had found. For once in her life, 'twas on the right side of town. She unpacked her things with such great ease as she watched her new curtains blow in the breeze. How wonderful it was to have her own room. School would be starting. She'd have friends over soon. There'd be sleepovers and parties. She was so happy. It's just the way she wanted her life to be. On the first day of school, everything went great. She made new friends and even got a date. She thought, I want to be popular, and I'm going to be. Because I just got a date with the star of the team. To be known in this school, you had to have clout, and dating this guy would sure help her out. There was only one problem stopping her fate. Her parents had said she was too young to date. Well, I just won't tell them the entire truth. They won't know the difference. What's there to lose? Jenny asked to stay with her friends that night. Her parents frowned but said, all right. Excited, she got ready for the big event. But as she rushed around like she had no sense, she began to feel guilty about all the lies. But what's pizza, a party, and a moonlit ride? Well, the pizza was good and the party was great, but the moonlight ride would have to wait. For Jeff was half drunk by that time, but he kissed her and said that he was just fine. Then the room was filled with smoke, and Jeff took a puff. Jenny didn't believe he was smoking that stuff. Now Jeff was ready to ride to the point, but only after he smoked another joint. They jumped into the car for the moonlight ride, not thinking that he was too drunk to drive. They finally made it to the point at last, and Jeff started trying to make a pass. A pass is not what Jenny wanted at all. And by pass, I don't mean playing football. Perhaps my parents were right. Maybe I'm too young. Boy, how could I ever be so dumb? With all of her might, she pushed Jeff away. Please take me home. I don't want to stay. Jeff cranked up the engine and floored the gas. In a matter of seconds, they were going too fast. As Jeff drove on in a fit of wild anger, Jenny knew that her life was in danger. She begged and pleaded for him to slow down, but he just got faster as they neared the town. Just let me get home. I'll confess that I lied. I really want out of this moonlight ride. Then all of a sudden, she saw a big flash. Oh God, help us, please. We're going to crash. She doesn't remember the force of impact, just that everything all of a sudden went black. She felt someone remove her from the twisted rubble and heard, "Call an ambulance. These kids are in trouble." Voices she heard, a few words at best, but she knew there were two cars involved in the wreck. Then wondered to herself if Jeff was all right and if the people in the other car were alive. She awoke in the hospital to faces so sad. "You've been in a wreck, and it looks pretty bad." These voices echoed inside of her head as they gently told her that Jeff was dead. They said, "Jenny, we've done all that we can do, but it looks as if we'll lose you too." "But the people in the other car," Jenny cried. "We're sorry, Jenny, they're also dead." Jenny prayed, "God, forgive me for what I have done. I only wanted to have one night of fun. Tell those people's family I've made their lives dim, and I wish I could return their families to them. Tell Mother and Dad that I'm sorry I lied, and that it's my fault so many have died. Oh, nurse, won't you please tell them that for me?" The nurse just stood there and never agreed, but took Jenny by the hand with tears in her eyes, and a few moments later, Jenny died. A man asked the nurse, "Why didn't you do your best to bid that girl her last request?" She looked at the man with eyes oh so sad, because the people in the other car were her mom and dad. This story is sad and unpleasant, but true. So young people, take heed. It could have been you. What seemed like an innocent thing to say, an innocent thing to go and do, caused a tragic end. Now, all the lies that we tell aren't usually going to end in that kind of emotional tragedy, but they have a spiritual tragedy to them. They take us away from a deeper relationship with God. So that we need to remember that we have a responsibility before God to take on as a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 7-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 9-year-old, a 10-year-old, an 11-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 13-year-old, a 14-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 16-year-old, a 17 and 18 year old. We have the responsibility to take on and secure within us the determination to be honest, regardless of the consequences. Be honest to our God, to ourselves, to our parents, to our family, to our friends. I hope that we as parents teach our children honesty. That's the lesson for your consideration this morning. I know I went longer than I usually do, and I appreciate your patience. We're about to sing a song of encouragement. Satan loves to create lies that will draw us further away from him. Sometimes he convinces whole religious groups to accept the lie that faith only is going to save them, or that all you've got to do is go to altar call or invite Jesus into your heart. I think everybody here understands what the Scriptures teach, however. The Scriptures do indeed teach that we need to believe Jesus to be the Son of God. But based on that belief, we need, believing Jesus to be the Son of God, we need to turn away from serving Satan and come to Jesus, confessing Him to be the Son of God and dying with Him in baptism. If you've not yet done that, get away from whatever lies Satan's telling you about your life and die with Jesus this day. If you have a need to respond to the invitation, we invite you to have a seat at the front as we stand together and as we sing.